Hello and welcome to episode 49 of Track. At Track, our aim is to shine a light on the UK running club scene. This week on Track, Kat and myself will go through our Manchester Marathon experiences, and we also have an interview with Naomi Mitchell, who came second at the Manchester Marathon, securing her place at the European Champs, running a PB of 2:30:54. We'll have a quick look at some of the other results that have happened over the last couple of weeks, and Robbie will also update us with where he's at in his Southampton Marathon build-up plans. Hi guys, how are you doing?
Yeah, good.
All good, thank you, Ben. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. So we're recording on a Monday, and about 7 or 8 days after Manchester Marathon, Kat. You and I both ran and both walked away with PBs, so should be a fairly happy chat for us tonight. Not so sure about Robbie, who we'll get to soon, battling COVID and struggling to get to his marathon start line. But should we start with the good stuff and talk through Manchester? So how was it for you? I know you went there for a long weekend and made a sort of a long weekend of it, and the race went well. So how did it go?
So my marathon went well. That was, I think I was more pleased with actually how the marathon went than the time. Obviously, I had said I wanted to go under 3:30, and that was the big goal. But what I really felt like on the day is I actually finally cracked the marathon distance and actually enjoyed running it. So I was really, we've spoken lots before about a watch. And I decided as build up for this marathon had been pretty much non-existent. But it's one that there's no pressure, there's nothing to lose if I run a bad one. So I decided to try all the running watch. And it makes it such a nice experience. I used it for the first 2 miles to make sure I didn't go off too fast. Mm-hmm. But actually wasn't any risk of that. I went off really slow and I was fine with that, and then I just flicked it onto a screen that didn't tell me anything anymore and never looked back at it. And I could have guessed at any time what pace I was running just by how it felt. And as I slowed down, I was thinking, yeah, I've slowed, but I know I haven't slowed that much.
Okay. And
it just really changed the experience. I just completely kept complete belief that I was going to run under 3:30 and just ran. It was so much nicer. And the last mile was tough, but other than that, it was good.
So you ran 3:29 underneath that 3:30 time, which got you obviously quite a long distance, a good for age for London as well, which is another box ticked. Talk to us then about, you've obviously gone over and looked back at the splits afterwards without looking at the watch. How did that go? Was it were you up and down, but sort of averaged out, or how did it go?
Fairly consistent. I think I pretty much knew what I was doing. There were times I was running with other people at times and they were calling splits, and so I had some idea what sort of pace I was running, but not, I just seemed to set into that sort of 7:40, 7:50 sort of pace and just ran that pretty much for as long as I could. And there were bits where I slowed down because it is a bit hilly, isn't it? I mean, I won't be doing Manchester again. There are some hills.
Isn't it described as the flattest marathon in the world?
Yeah, not true. That's just not... I don't know why they tell that lie, because there is hills in it.
I think maybe that was because there has been a course change, hasn't there? And I wonder if that's where the confusion is now. Because, yeah, certainly there's that one big, short, sharp hill, almost, I don't know where that is. Is that Altrincham? Yeah.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. But so how did it go, Kat? So what were the crowds like? How was the fueling and everything else? What was the sort of ups and downs of the marathon?
The fueling, I took a bit of a risk on that as well, because I've never tried Morton gels before, but I've heard they're good. So I, like you do, I decided to try those out on marathon day. But I think I was talking to you before, like my stomach's really strong, like it, nothing ever affects it. And they were absolutely fine. I thought they were quite easy to take because they're like jelly. Yeah. And so I just kept, like to start with, I did a whole one, and then towards the end, I couldn't stomach a whole one. More just because like you can't eat anything, like you don't want to. Mm-hmm. And so I just kept putting it back down my bra and then getting it back out, having a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And that, yeah, I think that went pretty well. I probably could have done one more. I probably should. But yeah, I thought the organisation of Manchester Marathon is really good. Mm-hmm. The toilets at the start, great. You can just go straight up to them. There's no queues, which is pretty great at the start of a marathon. And the wave thing seemed to work pretty well.
Yeah, we were saying, weren't we, I think before and afterwards, it's obviously not comparative to a London, but it's quite nice being able to just sort of stroll up and not have the masses of crowds and the massive queues and all the logistics that a London has. Because as you say, yeah, there are toilets right by the start line and it's easy to get to the bag drop, relatively speaking. And there was quite an easy feel about it, I thought.
Yeah, it seemed, I didn't seem to have any nerves on the start line. I think because it's all just so relaxed, it didn't feel like getting to the start of London.
Yeah, and okay.
Crowds, there's definitely not as many crowds, which I don't know how much difference that makes, but I think...
No, there were clusters, weren't there? Sorry, Robbie, there were clusters that in the sort of city centre, I think they called it, where you turned around and there was a big screen. That was busy.
Yeah.
Parts of them were somewhat busy, and I forget where else, but it was sort of pockets, definitely pockets of crowd rather than the streets lined of like a London is.
Yeah. Yeah. I bumped into George's dad at mile 12 as well, that was funny. He ran up beside me and said, "Hi, I'm George's dad." But I thought he said Georgie's dad. And so I just looked at him blankly just trying to think, who the hell is Georgie and why would I know their dad? And then he said, "George Beardmore." And I was like, oh, now this is all making sense because I know you're here and running this. And so then I ran with him and that was really good. That passed mile 12 to mile 16. Chatting with him.
Well, Mark is a seasoned veteran at the marathons. He's done, I think, over 50 marathons now, or close to it. So he knows what he's doing. And we should say, actually, George, obviously, people like listening to George's updates, isn't with us this week because he is out in Augusta, Georgia, watching the Gulf Masters, which is now finished. But we hope to get George on next time when he might actually be on a warm weather training camp in Portugal. So, we'll get George back on next time around. But yeah, Mark is... must have been sort of a cool, sensible head at those sorts of miles, I imagine.
Yeah, very. He was talking about all the other marathons he'd done and which ones were nice. And he stopped at 16 to fill up a water bottle. And he said, "I'll go on. I'm just going to stop and do this." And then he caught me at mile 22. Right. And that was really nice. That was a point where you could do with some company. And he ran with me till 25 and then he said, "Oh, you're finishing stronger, go on ahead." And I thought, really? That's not what it feels like. But I did pull away and then saw him again at the finish. So that was really, really good to have some company out there.
Right. I know you're very much about kind of the mental side of it this time around, Kat. Is the part of you that thinks that you're already kind of looking to what you could, how fast you could run if you actually, because I know your miles were a bit broken, weren't they? And your training was a bit broken and that kind of led you into feeling probably a little less pressure on yourself.
I think this was such a bad thing. It was, you know, I didn't expect big things from this. I know I've been in way better shape before. But what I did you know, I finally worked out the mental side of marathon running. And, you know, they're not using my watch for the big part, but there was loads of other stuff I worked on, like just really staying positive and just like, you know, just that total belief that it's going to go well and just not letting anything start to get you, like, you know, mentally down. So I started to get cramp in my hamstring at 20 and 21 miles, and they're like two of my slowest miles. But mentally, I just didn't let that get to me. I was just like, nope, still having a good time. Still, you know, as long as I keep going, it'll be great. And so, yeah, I'm really hoping that going to the next one, I can keep that sort of mental attitude to it, but actually put in a bit more actual training for it.
Was that a 10-minute PB cut?
Yeah, I think 11 minutes, actually. So, yeah. But I think I've probably been in better shape than that before. I mean, I really hardly ran. You know, I was trying to look at my training like you do to try and give you the confidence that you're going to run a great marathon. And I was just like, there's just nothing to look at. Like, there's a couple of good runs. And I didn't do any speed work because my knee was injured. So there wasn't the volume and there wasn't any of the quality either. So I knew I wasn't in physically as good shape as I should be for running the marathon, but I think I did work very hard on my mental game.
Your 23 mile or 20 mile a time trial, that was the one, wasn't it? The confidence.
Yeah. Those were the ones I was kind of clinging to as my, like, you know, I ran a good 20 mile time trial. So I was thinking, well, that's, you know, that's good training for a marathon. So but that's it.
What's the next one, Kat? Do you have another marathon lined up in mind?
Well, London next year, I think.
Nothing in the autumn?
No, I don't like running more than one a year. Okay. I think I like to, like this time now, I like this time because this is when I start to think of all the things that I can change in a year. Like, you know, the conditioning work you bring in at this sort of time to make you go next year. There's so much you can do, you know, in a year's build up to a marathon that can change things by next spring. So I'll just focus on like getting my 5K time down and stuff for now.
Great. Well done. Glad it worked out well. And obviously you saw Coach John with about 800 meters to go to give you that final push.
Yeah, that was loud. So Mark said, did you know that bloke in the corner? Like, yeah, because there were loads of people shout your name anyway because you've got it written on the number, but yeah. Was shouting for so long, so loudly, I felt like he was chasing me down the
good old John. Okay, great. Well, well done. Yeah, it was a good day for me as well. So PB for you and a PB for me, not quite an 11-minute PB. I got about a four-minute PB plus a few seconds. And yeah, so I ran 2:30:18, which on the face of it, you probably think I should be really frustrated and pissed off with those 18 seconds. But actually, my initial reaction, and it sort of stayed the same since, has been like, I've been pretty content with it. Pretty happy with it, and if you told me beforehand you would have run 2:30:18, I think I probably would have thought I'd be devastated for missing those sort of 19 seconds. And obviously I would have loved to have run 19 seconds quicker, but actually I was just like you, Kat, I was happy with how I ran it as more than perhaps the outcome of it. That the whole idea of it was to be sensible for the half up to halfway, like really sensible, feel really easy. So people always tell you that the first half should be super easy. I remember Dan Robinson saying to me at another marathon that the first 13 miles is just transport. Just think about getting there and nothing else. And John's classic saying is get to 20 miles in one piece. So all of those things I really tried to take on board this time. And I just ran really comfortably, really easy for 20 miles. And I think the most telling thing about it is my first 20 miles were just really uneventful. Nothing happened that I remember particularly, good or bad. I was in quite a nice pack. So I was in a pack with a couple of pacers. So Eleanor Bolton and a guy called Dan Cashy were pacing some other females. They said to a 2:32, but it was always quicker than 2:32 pace. So I sat in a pack of 5, 6, 7, 8 people up until the 20-mile mark. So yeah, I had paces effectively for 13 miles of it. That was good. I managed to get my gels down and keep them down, which has always been a big struggle for me. And yeah, just tried to stay sensible. A couple of times when I saw people in the crowd that I knew, so John a couple of times, Carl and Adam, you do get that burst of energy and you do sort of start speeding up for a few seconds, but sort of calm myself down again. And I literally got to 20 miles and sped up and tried to sort of finish strong. And I did that. My last 6 miles were pretty strong. And a slight negative split. So from halfway onwards. So yeah, just like you, I was just really happy with how I ran it. And it's also, I've always bang on about the 2:30 barrier. And again, I was talking to Dan and Carl and others afterwards, and they've sort of said that this should be your, almost like your confirmation that you can do it. Like you thought you could before and you hoped you would before. And you still haven't done it, but this is almost a confirmation that if you can run 2:30:18, then you can probably run sub 2:30. So that's given me huge confidence and actually huge like motivation, because my last few marathons haven't gone well. And I think I said to you, I needed a good marathon experience, because I hadn't been enjoying the last few. And this really was a good experience, which has now given me sort of, you know, reinvented my love for the marathon and going forward to try and get more out of it. So all of those positives probably outweigh the 19 second negative. I liked the course, I enjoyed it. It was flat enough. Enjoyed it and it was good. And on to the next one, really, I suppose.
Go on, Kat, sorry.
I don't know how you blitz, like, see that chart they get at the end where it shows what the average marathon looks like, where it just goes on mm-hmm. and then comes off at the end, and you see yours on just a straight line straight across, like you just did not slow at all. That is like, you know, just looking at your watch, I would have just been panicking that it was coming, like that slowing was gonna start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think perhaps that is good, I think. And I think that's probably the way I'm going to try and run marathons in the future. I suppose on the flip side, I think other people would argue that you've left some in the tank there, and you that was your day. You could have gone quicker, which is probably fair enough. But hopefully it's not my last attempt being in that sort of shape, and perhaps next time I can do the same, just slightly quicker, still try and run sensibly but slightly quicker.
Was there ever a point you thought you were going to duck under?
I didn't look at my watch actually from about 18 miles onwards, so I knew I was sort of on pace ish and I knew it was going to be close the whole way. But I'd actually sort of made my peace with just running it well, and the time will sort of take care of itself. I'm not really sure why I didn't look at my watch. That wasn't a pre-race decision. I just wanted to focus on running hard and running what felt like the right speed. So I would see my splits. I would see my mile splits from like 18 miles onwards, but I'd never looked at the overall time that I was on. So I didn't know what time I was going to run until we sort of turned that little corner and saw the big clock at the end, and I saw it ticking over 2:30. But again, I wasn't hugely disappointed at the time, and I'm taking that as a positive. So
I think that's the first time I've ever heard you say that you're content with a race result, Ben, which is, I've never heard you say that before.
No, and that's probably not a good thing, is it, really? And I was sort of have these chats with other people, like, if I'm not enjoying it, why am I doing it? So I'm glad an enjoyable one. And yeah, and it doesn't mean you don't want more. It doesn't mean you don't want to be quicker, but it just means on the day it went well, I suppose.
I think four minute PB at that level, that's quite considerable, isn't it? Like when because you got some really good TV time, some TV footage on the live stream when you met Georgina Schweinen, who was in there. So they kind of followed you guys for quite a bit, and the commentators were completely out on the timings and saying that you were kind of on for about 2:35.
Yeah.
Oh no, like Ben's no wonder he's twitching around. He's not happy here. As it happens, they were just miles off on their timings, and you were kind of in complete control, basically. So,
I did feel in control, I got to 20 miles and thought I'll try and push on now. So, yeah, it worked well. Time will tell whether that was my best day and I've wasted the opportunity, or if it's just a good day on.
I'm sure not. Do you realize how twitchy a runner you are, Ben, during a marathon?
What do you mean, looking around and stuff?
Yeah, you were just kind of a bit Rafa Nadal-ish.
Oh, really?
What, what's that?
Big arms?
Just really Spanish, to be honest. Spanish, quite volatile.
Tanned.
And carrying a around with you, which is a weird decision to make, but to work.
No, I didn't. No, I'll look out for that next time then.
Yeah, well done both of you. Amazing. So happy for both of you on the day. I know I was exchanging messages with George, and obviously when we saw both your results come in, just massive, massive success, I think. So
actually, Mark told me Ben's time when I was at 22 miles, and that was quite motivating to find out that Ben had said it. I was just like, oh, that's good. I knew it was 18 seconds over, but I thought you're still going to be happy with that.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Good at that point to find that out. I was just like, oh, that's good. If Ben can do it, I can do it.
Yeah, brilliant.
Not 2:30, obviously.
What's next?
Robbie, you are still down to run Southampton Marathon in a couple of weeks, are you or aren't you? What's the update? We know you've had a few illnesses and setbacks, so bring us up to where you're at.
So running it definitely is my intention. So got COVID pretty badly last week. So this time last week I was really ill. Like first time I've had COVID in this world that we live in these last 2 years, kind of knowingly. And the training was going really, really well. So kind of coming into that kind of peak time where obviously kind of putting the high miles in and kind of big training sessions. And I think but on the Thursday, there was one. It was quite a big session. I can't remember what I put on there. Did I put ropey or something like that? I think you commentated on it.
It was ropey
because I was checking COVID basically, and I was kind of coughing afterwards pretty hard, and I thought something's not quite right here. And then the next morning tried to go out and just legs just felt absolutely like just nothing in there, so knew I wasn't very well. I tested positive that afternoon, got really, really ill, and then had probably 3 days off running, which isn't very much really, is it? But then I just thought, I was just saying this to you before we hit record, but I just thought, go for it, basically. I just thought, fuck it, just go for it and see what happens.
You ignored my advice.
I ignored everyone's advice, basically. Ignored everyone's advice. I hid on the Strava because I couldn't handle the negative vibes from my dad mainly, who would have kind of cuffed around the ear for seeing that I was running with COVID. But there was method in the madness. I was thinking that, you know, I was pretty sure I wasn't going to die. I was pretty confident of that. So I just thought if I put in quite a big week, get through the worst of it and get a long run in as well. And then I can kind of, at this point, like tonight was the point where I'd kind of assess how that had gone and whether I was kind of going to be able to do it. So in that time, I've done 90 miles, which is what I kind of planned to do a bit more than that. So I'm on about 15 miles because of COVID, but I also did the national road relays on Saturday and a long run on Sunday as well. So both of those are pretty hard at points, but definitely given me confidence that I'm not going to die and I'm still get a half decent time.
Has the time goal changed at all? Has the paces changed, or you just
No, I'm just going to go for it, I think. I mean, I genuinely was feeling really, really fit before I got COVID. Fittest I've ever been, definitely, at that kind of pace. Probably not very sharp, not very fast, but definitely like strong on the pace that I'm going to go out at. That's probably the one thing that I'm slightly concerned about is I haven't had that. So the National Road Relays on Saturday is obviously a shorter, harder hit, isn't it? And then my Sunday run was long and slow, like much slower. And I was thinking all the way, could I handle a much quicker pace? Basically, look, I don't know what I'm doing. I haven't got a clue. I mean, genuinely, these are the times when you need a coach, don't you, and like feedback. And because it wasn't there, I just thought there's no point half inching it, if that makes sense. Does that make sense?
In for a penny, in for a pound sort of thing.
Well, yeah, exactly that. So, you know, I could have just kind of, basically, if I'd have had like two or three more days off the running, which was Kat's advice, which is basically just don't run.
The respiratory nurse.
The respiratory, exactly. What the hell? The
physiologist.
Yeah. What the hell does Kat know? A nurse giving me advice. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. But if I'd have had two or three more days off, I'd have just taught myself out of the marathon, definitely. Mm. And you just don't know then, do you? So, you know, and it could have gone wrong. I could have died. That would have been pretty shit, but I haven't. So, here we are. Let's give it a go.
But so this Sunday, you were 2 weeks out from the marathon.
Yeah.
And you went and did 21 miles.
Yeah.
With
COVID.
Like, I'm pretty sure you could have got away with, you know, 15 and maybe down to 12 because you've got COVID. And that would have been...
But you know what? The confidence that I'd have lost for not doing that, I think for a runner of my level, isn't worth it. Do you know what I mean? I think that's fair enough if you're like, you know, running times like Ben or, you know, or whoever, and where you've got that kind of that knowledge and that background. But I think for the confidence I'd have lost if I hadn't have gone out and done because I missed obviously the long run before. So I'd have 2 weeks without a long run. That was my thinking. So actually it ties in with your kind of mental approach, Kat, completely. So we're two peas in a pod with this kind of thing. I was just thinking, you know, for the confidence.
To be honest, the confidence is the most important thing. Standing on the line believing you're going to run well is more than what you do in training, I think.
And if I hadn't have done a 20-mile run for 4 weeks, whatever it would have been before the race, I don't think I'd have reacted well to that. And that 20-mile run was a bad one because it was the day after the Midland relays. And that wasn't a good long run. So actually my longest decent long run would have been like 5 weeks before.
Yeah, I think
it's like a different training block, isn't it, then? So.
Just rest up now. have you checked your resting heart rate to see if that's recovered?
Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's pretty high compared to what it was.
Well, when I got flu a month before London once, my resting heart rate ever recovered till after London, and I ran really badly. but just That's keep tough. And don't not run if it's still high, but just adjust, you know, just don't go out as hard if you know that you're not fully recovered.
So I'm quite lucky that I'm blessed with a bit of a ridiculously low resting heartbeat. So it has gone up. So it's usually hovers around 32, 33 as a resting heartbeat. Really low. Whenever I go to hospital, they're always concerned about heartbeat, and I always have to explain it's genuinely low. But it's a family. It's my dad's is really low, and then obviously put into that the running. So it's gone up to about 46, 47, which is actually still pretty low, isn't it? So I think I'm blessed. So it's noticeable to me.
Yeah.
Actually, it's still pretty low, isn't it? Really, you know, in the grand scheme of things. So.
But you can use that to guide you as to whether you truly have recovered from that. If it's fully recovered by marathon day, then you know that you're probably, you know, fine to go out with. Goal,
yeah,
but it's not, just be more realistic.
Whatever medical advice can you give me, Kat, from this point in?
It's too late.
Completely ignore.
And you ignored it.
I just want to know what I'm ignoring, really. So
I can't talk to you about it again till after the marathon.
Does throw up an interesting point, and I'm certainly guilty of it myself, that we often think more is better, don't we, when it comes to running and miles, and you have to get your long one in, you have to get your 90 miles in, because that's the only way it works. And I'm not knocking you, because I do exactly the same, but I think it's a common feature, apart from perhaps the very, very best, like you said, who just know that actually that's not always the case, or a good coach will know that actually that isn't always.
I think this is it. I think genuinely this is where a good coach kind of is the difference maker, isn't it? Because then you just kind of put everything on their opinion and their knowledge of you and their ability to be able to analyse your past and your present, etc. Whereas the reality was, all I had was the voices in my head, like a bit of crap Strava data, and just some kind of panicky thoughts and some kind of general hunches, really. Hunches, you know, that's what it goes on. And ultimately, when I was lying there in those days and I wasn't running, and I got genuinely quite upset, really. So I felt, you know, like I was really fit. And then all of a sudden you just think, you know, your mind starts thinking, you know, not only am I not going to be able to run this marathon, but is this me for a long time and et cetera, et cetera. And I definitely wouldn't, I don't react well to that kind of mindset, really. So I just thought, to bring it full circle, fuck it, basically, just give it a go, see what happens.
So what's the plan now? You got 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks?
Yeah, well, this could do some advice, actually, really, because, you know, what I was doing before, I genuinely don't know what I'm doing now. So, I mean, my kind of loose plan now is definitely kind of taper, so probably about 65 this week, and then down to 40, just keep it quiet, and then just maybe just a couple of kind of tempo-ish runs at marathon pace, a few kind of really short sessions.
That keeping things at marathon pace in the week of the marathon, I found that the first time I've done that without feeling like I'm up all my speed, and I felt a lot more ready to run at marathon pace, because your legs are feeling good at that last week or two. You can just go out and do everything at marathon pace, but just not nearly as much, and that seemed to be, this is the first time I think I've probably got taper right as well. No, I didn't know.
My loose advice would be, you're obviously not getting any fitter between now and then. So it's about getting to the start line, feeling fresh, feeling motivated, feeling up for it. So whatever gets you to the line, doing that. And as I said, like, don't do too much. You can't do, well, you probably can do, it's much easier to do too much now than it is to not do enough.
Yeah. Like,
what your fitness is going to be your fitness now. So whatever gets you feeling okay without doing too many miles is probably the best thing.
So what, in terms of mileage, that you took, I know yours is a bit sporadic, Kat, in the week before or the 2 weeks before, what, so what did you drop it to in the week before?
I set a longer taper this time. So I was sort of topping out at 100, 105 miles. And then I had a 75, then a 65, then a 50. And then race week, I think I'd ran about 25 before the race. So I sort of came down quite gradually. So at your point, I was probably, so 2 weeks out, I'd done a 60 and then a 50, I think. 65.
So you'd be on about 50 at this point, and then 25 the week after.
Yeah. But as I said, I think it's about what you feel like is okay, but also with the knowledge that you're probably going to want to do more than you need to. So just maybe take 10% off whatever you think is a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
thanks. Yeah, that's... What was...
So, Robbie, we're going to obviously look forward to tracking you and seeing how you do. First marathon as well, so don't be too harsh on yourself, whatever happens.
Thanks, Ben. Basically what you're saying
is... try not...
You're going to be shit.
don't use your watch too much. Like, try and just enjoy the actual race and just try and... It won't make any difference looking at your watch, but it might make you hate it if it tells you you're slowing down. So just go out with the intention of, you know, you can check it if it's not going to depress you too much, but just think about just racing it. And like we were talking when we were out, go for the win.
that's exactly it, yeah. I should have said that to you, Ben, last time when you said, what are my time goals? I'm just going for the W, mate, so.
Yeah, well, if you don't, it will be a disappointment.
Well, look, I mean, thanks for the loser advice there, you two. I can see it in your voice. Basically, it's all the advice that you give someone that is going to absolutely shit. Don't check your watch. Don't get too depressed. Don't beat yourself up at the end of the race. There's absolutely no track motivational kind of, you've got this, you know, it's in the bag, or, you know, just tick over the first 20 and come in like quicker than you think you're going to. But yeah, thanks for nothing, Yusuf. Appreciate that.
Anytime. I'm just going to very, very quickly, I'm not going to spend too much on this, guys, and see if you've got any opinions. Just so a few results that the listeners, I'm sure they know it already. But we were talking about the Manchester Marathon, and in the women's, Becky Briggs won in 2:29.04. This week's interview guest is Naomi Mitchell, and I spoke to her this afternoon. She came second in 2:30.54. And that meant that she and obviously Becky... and third place Georgia Svining, as you mentioned, from Cambridge AC, got the Commonwealth Games standard as well as the European Champs standard. And Naomi Mitchell was named alongside Becky Briggs this week for that GB team for the European Championships in March. In Munich in August. So congrats to Becky, who we spoke to a couple of weeks ago, and Naomi, who you're going to hear our interview with in a couple of minutes' time. In the men's, Johnny Meller looked to be the real class of the field, was first in 2:10.46, followed by his teammate Ross Millington and Kevin Seaward in third. Also fifth place, Andrew Hayes secured a Commonwealth and European time as well, who's also been named in the European team. So guys, I know you saw this announcement for the GB team for the European champs. So we've got Becky Briggs, Naomi Mitchell, Rosie Edwards, and Worcester and NAZ elites Alice Wright for the women. And for the men, we've got Ross Millington, Andrew Hayes, Mohammed Adan, Luke Caldwell, Ben Connor, and Phil Sessman for the men. So fairly strong teams there. And I speak to Naomi a little bit in our interview about why she sort of asked for a preference for the European champs over the Commonwealth Games, and how that selection process works. So that was an interesting little chat there. Robbie, you mentioned that you ran in the national 12 stage relays. Just quickly, senior results there. So the senior women's was won by Salford Harriers after a great leg from Eleanor Bolton at the start. Second place was for the women was Highgate and Basingstoke third. And in the men's, Tunbridge AC won, which was a sort of a last leg winner. So a pretty close affair there. Tunbridge took the win over Highgate Harriers and then Bedford Harriers in third, with Nick Ulab and Thomas Keane won the fastest leg medals. Pretty close one there at the Nationals, Robbie.
Yeah, it was surprised, I think, Tunbridge kind of coming on late in the day. I think you obviously get a feel as you're running and then watching it that you obviously got a sense of what's going on at the front end, and it was Highgate Bedford all the way, and then somewhere ninth leg maybe it just kind of got the gap closed, and Tunbridge just kind of drove them in from there on in. I'm pretty sure I read that Tunbridge didn't have any of the first 20 fastest legs, or maybe 10 fastest legs, and it was just pure consistency. They just hit that sweet spot of just really, really kind of solid times, and that's what saw them through. So yeah, impressive stuff.
Great. And then the only other sort of results I wanted to bring up quickly was over at Berlin half marathon a couple of weeks ago. Two of our former interviewees as well ran really well on the women's side of things. So Samantha Harrison ran a PB of 68 minutes and 12 seconds, a huge run from Samantha. And also Clara Evans, another PB, who finished eighth in 70 minutes and 17 seconds. So some really good results over there in Berlin. And another guest of ours, Natasha Cockrum, won the Brighton Marathon weekend 10K, just outside of her personal best. So loads of racing happening. Some of the results there, I'm sure our listeners have seen some of the others as well. But yeah, so what's to come for you, Kat? Just before we introduce our interview, how long are you having off? When are you going to be running again? Or are you already back running?
Well, I was due to do the road relays, but luckily we all pulled out at the last minute, deciding that, and actually it would have been a disaster because I ran a mile on Saturday and it was at 10 minute miling. And so, but the others...
You say this, Kat, but did somebody tell Carol Clark? I don't think she got the memo because she ran for us on her own on the first leg. So I think you lot might have pulled out, but forgot to tell her maybe.
It was a last minute decision, but no, Carol did know there'd be no one waiting for her to hand over to. Yeah, she got round. That morning, basically that night and that morning, I was an idiot, really. I was going to run it just to field a team, and then Emma messaged with a shin injury, and I put pressure on her not to run. So no, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't risk it.
You'll be glad to know, just when Carol thought her day couldn't get any worse, I shouted, "Go on, Maggie!" for the second time this season, and got her name wrong again, complete, and I realised as I did it, completely unforgivable. So her day went from bad to worse.
And it was for Maggie instead. Yeah, no, she had a good time. She did enjoy it. I've got a mile race to do on the 27th of April, which is on the track in the Vets League. Nice. That is so probably an idiot move.
From one extreme to the other, marathon to the mile.
Yeah, straight down to track now. Just going to try and get running again for that. And then
that's good.
Track stuff. And how about you?
First proper run back today on the Monday. So that's sort of 8 days afterwards. I'm just going to easy run for a week or so and then see where I am. Got some track races lined up for the summer, some threes and some fives, and then build up again towards the autumn London Marathon. I have do the big half in September as well, so try and get some speed over the summer and then do another build.
Yeah.
And Robbie, we look forward to seeing how you go. Best of luck for the last 2 weeks. Don't do too much. And best of luck for the marathon.
I mean, the good thing is that I don't think I can get COVID again, can I? So that's that danger is now gone. So all in.
Always looking on the bright side.
Yep.
So we'll record on Sunday evening of the 24th. So we can
That's
recap.
Completely dependent on what happens there, Kat. You may never talk to me again, or I may never talk to you again.
Well, another athlete, or another runner, I should say, shouldn't call ourselves athletes, Kat. But our interview this week, Naomi Mitchell, as I said, she came second at Manchester Marathon. She ran 2:30:54, secured a GB place at the European Championships in August. So spoke to her today, spoke to her about her training in the lead up to Manchester, how the race unfolded, looking ahead to August and lots of other things. So we really hope you enjoy the interview with Naomi, and thank you again for listening. And guys, we'll be back again soon, and the class of the outfit, George, will hopefully be back with us soon by then as well. Cheers, guys.
Bye. See ya.
This week on Track, we are delighted to be joined by England athlete, marathon runner and newly announced GB athlete for the upcoming European Championships in Munich, Naomi Mitchell. Naomi ran her marathon PB of 2:30:54 in Manchester last week, during which she secured second place and both European and Commonwealth Games qualifying times. Naomi runs for Reading AC, recently won Wokingham Half Marathon in her build-up to Manchester, and earlier this year represented England for the first time running the Glanola's Half Marathon. So we're delighted that she's agreed to chat to us here at Track. Hi Naomi, how are you?
Hi, yeah, really good, thank you.
Good, good. Well, thank you very much for taking some time out to chat to us. We really appreciate it. We're speaking on a Monday afternoon, and I know you work, so is it a day off work today for you?
Yeah, I work part-time now, so I'm off today, working on Tuesday and Thursday this week.
Okay, and am I right in thinking it's an accountant you are, your chartered accountant?
Yeah, I'm qualified as a chartered accountant. I currently work at KPMG in audit, which is super exciting. That's my job at the moment.
Okay, so how is that balance? You said you're part-time, so how is that balance between obviously elite level running and work? How do you strike that balance?
Yeah, it has been tricky in the past. So this is a job I've had since school. I was fortunate enough that they sent me off to university, and then I also worked for them. So it's coming up 9 years I've worked for them, and it has been really tricky sometimes. There have been years where I've not run hardly at all, and then years where I've really focused on my running, fitting in the work. But after kind of lockdown was starting to lift, that's when I made the decision if I really wanted to go for the running, now was the chance. That lockdown kind of showed me that it's kind of now or never with this kind of thing. So I went part-time in the summer, and it's so much easier now to balance the two. But I did spend many years juggling them, and had some decent results in that too, so it's definitely possible.
Yeah. And what is the main difference, would you say? Is it just, are you running more, or is it the things outside of running that are easier to fit in now that you're part-time, would you say?
I'd say it's definitely the things outside of running initially, because obviously my coach and I didn't want to just suddenly jump into loads more training straight away, because that's when kind of niggles and issues come along. So initially it was just getting more sleep, more time to recover, more time to go and see my kind of strength and conditioning coach, or get a massage, that kind of thing. Whereas I'd say this last, from kind of January onwards, I've also been able to really up my training and cross training as well. So it's kind of gradually moved into more training.
Okay, great. Well, it's nice that you've got an employer that is supportive in that way, I suppose, and lets you do that.
Yeah, I'm fortunate to have a role where I'm kind of in charge of lots of small jobs, so it was easier to kind of pick and choose the ones I wanted and keep just a smaller portfolio.
That's great. Okay, well, Naomi, we need to give you congratulations on two counts, really. First of all, we're talking about 7 days after the Manchester Marathon, where you ran a PB, a time 2:30:54 for second place, which was the European and Commonwealth Games qualifier time. And therefore, we recently found out a couple of days ago that you have been selected for the European champs in Munich. So congratulations on those two massive achievements. First of all, before we get into all of that, how are the legs feeling? Are they recovered sort of 7-8 days afterwards? Have you done any running since? And what's your typical recovery after a marathon race?
Yeah, well, thank you so much. First of all, I'm very excited to get that first GB vest. Yeah, my legs are feeling good. I think I haven't done a whole lot of running. So I tend to do quite a lot of mileage in my marathon builds. And so I really take the opportunity to have a bit of time off from running after my marathons. So I didn't run until Saturday, and I've done a couple of easy bits, but nothing crazy. And I've been doing some swimming and other stuff to kind of tide me over. So yeah, I'm feeling pretty good and ready to get going again this week, hopefully.
Great. How are you when you aren't running? Are you someone who's sort of jumping at the bit to start again? Or are you quite happy with the downtime, or does it depend on how the race has gone, I suppose, to how you feel?
Yeah, I think it definitely depends on how the race has gone. I think either way, I'm super keen to get going again. I mean, last year I had a couple of races that didn't go so well for me, and definitely straight away you just want to be doing as much as possible, which is really hard to kind of hold yourself back. This week's been, it's a little bit more fun, I guess, when you've done well. Like I still really want to get going, but it's more kind of planning and looking forward to what's coming, but also enjoying the time off whilst I have it as well. So yeah, I've been doing some things, meeting some friends and doing some things that I've avoided, especially because of COVID. You have to be extra careful now. So it's nice to have that celebration time.
Yeah, well, I think I'm right in saying, so the European Championships, which as you said, is gonna be your first GB vest, is being held, I believe, on the 15th of August, which I think if my maths is correct, it's about 18 weeks away, I suppose, there or thereabouts. So how quickly will you start to get back into sessions? How long are you easy running for? Do you have a plan yet, or is that still to be decided?
Yeah, so I mean, my coach is keen not to jump into a plan straight away because he wants me to kind of take a couple of easy weeks. But I know the rough outline will be some easy running still for 10 days or so. Then we'll do a speed block of maybe a month, and then we'll have a marathon build, which will end up being probably only about 10 weeks or so, which is quite short. But it's the first time I've done obviously a kind of championship off of a trial. So we don't think we'll need so much of a build than maybe when you're doing them every year to 6 months, 6 months to a year. So yeah, it'll be a shorter build and some speed stuff as well, which is always nice in the summer. So I'm looking forward to it being a little bit different, I think.
Yeah, okay. And will you try and incorporate some sort of shorter track races or just shorter races in general in that speed block, do you think?
Yeah, so I've got a few races on the cards. Not too many, I think, because it's obviously my focus will be this marathon and it's a shorter turnaround. I won't do as many as usual, but I'm hoping to do a couple of 10Ks, maybe one on the track if I can if I can decide that my Achilles are going to take it, and then probably one half marathon or a couple as well.
Okay, well, that's great. So obviously European champs in Munich, as I keep saying. First of all, how did you find out? Was it a phone call? Is it an email? How do you get told about these sorts of things when you're selected?
Yeah, so I think because it was a trial event at Manchester, we were fortunate enough that after the race we kind of knew what we were eligible for straight away, and we kind of had to give our preferences there. But yeah, I just got a phone call on Friday, just before they announced it, which was, yeah, exciting. So yeah, it's strange. You think having run for so long, like about 17 years, you always kind of picture getting your first GB call up as being like speechless, but I think I was just relieved more than anything to get the spot confirmed. So yeah.
Yeah, I suppose until you get the actual phone call confirming it, that there's still an element of doubt in your mind, I guess.
Yeah, you never know until it's kind of, yeah, until someone calls you and says you're definitely selected. So that was nice.
Oh, lovely. And so that was one of my questions. You've answered it, I suppose, somewhat. You do give your preference, because as we said, Commonwealth Games, obviously qualifying time as well, you're able to say what you would prefer to compete in. Is that right?
Yes, so technically Becky, being the trial winner, had the preference because there was just the one Commonwealth spot up for grabs. Mm-hmm. But then second and third and others under the times had to give their preference as well. And obviously Becky chose Euros because that's been announced as well. So I knew I was likely to have to give a choice, which was a difficult thing to do, really, because obviously the Commonwealth at home is an amazing opportunity, and England Athletics put on the trial and were fantastic with that. But I did choose Euros as my preference, so was pleased to get that.
Okay, and was that because of, or why was that? What was there any sort of particular reason that you thought, is it just a bigger, more illustrious event, would you say, or what was the reason?
Yeah, I definitely went back and forth between deciding which to kind of put my interest down for. I went to the University of Birmingham, and I also have family from Birmingham, so that was obviously, I genuinely did think that would be my preference for a long time. I just think that because it's my debut GB best, it was just, I just couldn't give up that opportunity, and also it's a team event as well as an individual event in Munich, so that's something I've never done before. I don't think it's a rare opportunity to get to run a marathon in a team and go for that, so I just thought it was something I couldn't say no to, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you mentioned, it's a team event. Obviously Becky Briggs has been confirmed alongside Rosie Edwards, Alice Wright and yourself, so yeah. A really strong team. And actually when we look at female marathon running in general, there's a number of names really on top of those, such as Jess Piasecki, Charlotte Perdue, Steph Davis, Steph Twell. So where do you see female marathon running from a British perspective? Do you feel like it's in a strong place?
Yeah, I think it's stronger than ever, really. Like the number of girls who are running 2:30 or sub or roundabouts is just incredible when you look at kind of previous years and rankings, which is great. I was definitely kind of pleased to see that there was a few championships this summer, which means that a lot of us get the opportunity to get a vest in something, because I think so many girls are running times deserving of opportunities, but there's just so many of us at the moment coming through. Really, I was just so grateful to have any opportunity at a vest, and would have taken whatever opportunity came my way. So I think definitely I was very fortunate to have run Manchester and to have the opportunity I have, really.
Yeah, okay. And just on the Munich Marathon, obviously it's a championship event. First of all, do you know much about the marathon course itself? I don't know if that's been announced yet, or have you seen that? And I suppose it links to Manchester as well, and your Kew Gardens race. Do those sorts of races where it's about potentially more about places than times change the way that you approach them, or do you have the same approach each time, really?
Yeah, I think a lot of things would change the approach. I think the thing with Munich as well will be the fact that it's August, and I've never run a marathon in the middle of summer before, so that's going to obviously change the pacing a little bit, I think, and especially if you're going for kind of a team, getting you all up as far as possible. But definitely it was tricky going into Manchester to decide, do you go like for your best possible PB time, or do you go for that just securing just under 2:32 and getting the place? But I think realistically, because there's so many decent female runners, you do have to really be going for your best kind of PB time as well as the qualifying time. But there is an element of knowing that you just need to get the time. You don't need to go full out necessarily, and then thinking forward to coming around to then doing another build straight away as well might affect some people's choices. But yeah, I I tend to run well kind of in that. If I go in the front pack, I'm a bit more confident in kind of doing my own race. So I think for me, it doesn't make much difference.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, that sort of leads us into Manchester Marathon. As I said at the start, you ran 2:30:54, which was a PB.
Yeah.
Got you second place. We're about a week or so out or after it now. What are your sort of thoughts and emotions? And when you look back, have you had time to think about the race and what went well?
Yeah, I think initially I was a little bit disappointed because I would have liked to, obviously everyone likes to win the race, especially if you're leading for any parts of it. But obviously Becky ran a fantastically paced race. I think even surprised herself a little bit with her final time. So I think as the week's gone on, I've kind of realised, obviously I've PB'd and I've qualified for something that a few years ago would have just been out of the question in my mind. So I've definitely kind of felt a lot more thankful for the race a few days later. I think for me, I struggled a little in the closing stages because we did go out quite quickly. Manchester's, you struggle with GPS a little in the city in Manchester, so I think the pacing was maybe a little bit quick first half, but I think for me that worked very well because it gave me that bit of extra time as I tired towards the end to get under the qualifying time. So yeah, I'm just, as the week's gone on, I'm just getting more excited for the next one, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and you've answered it a little bit already, but the pre-race plan, it was to sort of run in the front pack and run a quick time, and then hopefully that would take care of position and qualifying time.
Yeah, really, that was it. I felt like I could have run a sub 2:30 was kind of my thoughts going into it, and I think that's definitely still possible. So looking at the other women there and knowing that a few of them were capable, I just felt like the best thing to do was go out at that kind of PB effort and make sure I got in the top three, which were where the spots were.
Yeah. Okay. And how did, so obviously there was a lot up for grabs on the day. So did that alter your, I don't know, your feelings on the start line beforehand? Was there more nervousness around, or was it just a very much of a get a job done attitude?
I definitely was nervous, but I think actually as well, because I knew I was in shape and for my last couple of marathons, I've been very nervous. And like, that's kind of because they were my first ones really at that elite level after running London in 2020. Whereas this one, I really felt like I was in shape and like was supposed to be there. And I was a little bit more kind of confident mm-hmm. in kind of in taking the race on. So I think, because I knew there were so many spots up for grabs, it was kind of now or never in terms of opportunity. So that kind of gave me a bit of a boost and I was less nervous than I have been before. I just wanted to get the job done, do the best I could.
Yeah. Okay. And how did you find having the male competitors around? And obviously you had a pacer or two, I believe, with you for a large part of it. Was that pre-planned, I assume, and how did that turn out?
Yeah, it was brilliant being able to run with the men just from the mass race. I haven't had a marathon in a while where that's been the case, and you forget how much easier it is kind of going along with a pack. Although I would say as well, it is tricky, a little bit tricky with your pacing because everyone's so enthusiastic early on. It does tick it along a little bit, and so I did have to be conservative like midway through the race and say, actually, I need to make sure I'm running my own race here. But it was brilliant having all those people. And then the pacers, yeah, that was just some great work by England Athletics. We originally were only going to have 2:32 and 2:34, because obviously those are the qualifying times. But they managed to find three or four people who could go quicker. So I think there was some with Becky and a group behind, and there was one or two of me, depending on what part of the race it was. So yeah, they were just people who gave up their time to help us. So that's great.
Yeah. Okay. And were there many ups and downs throughout the race? So obviously it's a long way, and we know that in marathons that you can go through high points and low points. And did the mindset change at all, either positively or negatively, as Becky came past, or was it still a case of still got the same job to do, basically?
Yeah, it was an interesting one because it's probably the first time in a marathon where someone's overtaken me, but I've actually still been on target. So it was hard to, like, your automatic response is when you're tiring and someone else is progressing is to think that you're losing it and it's all going to fall apart. So it was to keep focused and realize actually I'm still kind of comfortably under what I need, and I'm also PBing, just to keep going, was my goal really. And luckily I managed to hold on. But yeah, I think it was one of the better races in terms of my mentality. Like, everything throughout felt fairly controlled. After we went through halfway quite quickly, I did kind of make the decision myself to ease off a few seconds per mile, just to know that I could get to the end and qualify, because that was obviously the main thing. So it was definitely, I felt like I was in control most of the way, and it was only really the last 3 or so miles that really hurt, which is not too bad for a marathon.
Do you work on that mentality side of things at all? Are you someone who has mantras or things in mind to think about when things get tough, or is it just a case of digging deep, I suppose, when it gets tough?
Yeah, I mean, I've spent years trying to work out what's the best thing to do with your mentality. I've tried lots of different things, but I think this season for me, my best thing was I did shorter races, so some 10Ks and halves, and just really pushed myself in those to kind of just, like, kind of hurt as much as possible and just go for it and talk myself up in those races. Unfortunately, I had some relatively good results in those. Obviously, in a marathon, you can't just push as hard as you can from the start, but I think just building up your confidence in placing well and getting PBs in those shorter races, for me, that's the best way to go in confident. I do try and talk myself through the race and talk myself up, but it's a long time to be feeling good. And so, yeah, you need to have those races in the bag, I think.
Yeah, sure. Well, you, one of your build-up races before Manchester was the Wokingham Half, which you won about 5 or 6 weeks prior to Manchester in 71:51. So do you think, you mentioned it, I suppose, a half marathon in the build-up is something you quite like to do, of that 5 or 6 weeks out? Is that fairly typical?
Yeah, that's, I tend to do a couple. I tend to do one, and then if that, and the first one, I'll just kind of go all out and see what happens. And then if that goes well, I like to do another one, which then the pressure's taken off a little bit because you've already done the one, and just really test my fitness with kind of 5 weeks to go. So that's why I did this build, and it worked well.
How did you like the Wokingham course and the event? As I said, you won first place, 71:51. Was that in the midst of a, did you taper down much for that, or was that in the midst of a normal training week for you?
I tapered slightly. I think I trained normally on the Tuesday at the track, and then I kind of skipped a later session in the week and just tapered down. So it was kind of a mini taper, because I think that's the thing, is if you really want to test your fitness and where you're at for the marathon, you do need to, you do need to taper slightly for your races, but it's balancing that with not over tapering too much and missing key sessions. So yeah, that, I had a slight taper. I really enjoyed Wokingham. So I live in Woodley, which is just around the, I'm in Wokingham Borough Council's area. So okay. It's my local one. So my aim was just to go and try and win it, really, which is getting more and more difficult with the kind of names popping up on the start list. But it's a good course. There's a couple of hills in it, but nothing crazy. I quite like an undulating route for a shorter race. So yeah, it was great.
Okay, great. And just jumping back to Manchester briefly, in terms of your fueling, how did that go? Is that something that you've always been okay at? Do you have a really regimented plan that you stick to, or is it a bit more fluid, forgive the pun?
I wouldn't say it's something I find easy, but it's something I've practiced at enough that I now kind of know what I need. So I use Morton, and I tend to use the drink as much as possible, because it's just, I find it a little bit easier to take on gradually as you're still running along. So I would take a carb drink every 5K, although I didn't start until I think it's about 45 minutes in, and then I'll start taking them every 5K in the drink, and then I have a few gels interspersed. Yeah, it's definitely something that I have struggled with, and you definitely need to practice it a lot before a race, but luckily now I think I'm there.
Cool. Okay. And then the evening of Manchester, was there big celebrations? Were you or was it just a case of job done, tired and off home? How did that look?
Yeah, well, it was a funny one because my husband was running the Reading Half the same day, so
Okay.
he couldn't come and watch. So it was a long kind of 4 hour journey back until we could celebrate, really. But luckily he got a PB too, so yeah, we just had a nice meal, had a meal out. That's generally what I do afterwards, is just eat eat good things. And then I think I was just a bit too tired for much else, really.
Okay, sounds good. Well, if you don't mind, Naomi, I wanted to ask you a few questions about your training and the build up, without giving away too many trade secrets. But are there sort of, is there a typical block that you tend to follow, or at least consistent boxes that you try and tick in a marathon block? And what does a typical sort of week or build look like for you in that sort of midst of marathon training?
Yeah, so for me, my build would tend to be about 12 weeks. I've tried, so I have done a few marathons. I've tried 16-week builds, and it was, for me, it was too much. I found I was peaking and then tiring in that last month. So it would be about 12 weeks. And in there, I'd try and do, like I said, at least one or maybe two half marathons. So I would do those as sessions as well. So it would be the race and then some more miles around that. And then other than that, I would say I tend to do a track session or a kind of VO2 on grass session every Tuesday. And then I'll do a longer threshold session and then a long run, kind of marathon paced or easy run as well. So that's the typical sessions of a week. And then lots and lots of easy running. I am a fan of miles. Luckily, I feel my body can support doing quite a lot of mileage, but I have started sneaking in some cross training as to kind of counteract some of the mileage as well, when I can. So lots of easy running, some swimming, little bit of cycling, but mainly just running.
So an emphasis on volume is big for you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you need to go overboard with it. Definitely, I tend to find if I'm getting to the end of a kind of, so my training, it'll be 12 weeks, but it'll tend to be three kind of pushing a bit harder and then one kind of down week and then back again. And if I find I'm getting to that down week really, really needing it and almost wanting like a rest week or a taper week, then I know I'm doing too much. I should get to that rest, that easy week, and just tick along as normal and just enjoy that it's a little bit easier. So I think that, yeah, for me, I know when my body's doing too much and I'll cut back a bit.
Okay. And that down week, is that down in terms of intensity and volume, or one or the other, or does
Just volume,
it?
really. So I'll still do my key sessions, but just back off a little bit on the miles or the extra stuff I'm doing just to reset. It often fits in with if I've raced on the Sunday, I'll then have the easy week will be following that anyway, so I know my body's recovering and needs a little bit of extra time anyway.
Okay. That makes sense. And are there any sort of either big sessions or sessions that you'd like to tick off, sort of real confidence booster sessions that sort of give you a bit of belief that you where you want to be? Are there ones that you do every block, or do the sessions change every time?
Yeah, so we mix up the sessions quite a lot, but one of the kind of main areas that I kind of see improvements is in my kind of longer threshold marathon long run types of things. So there'll be a mix of easy running and marathon pace and hard running all within one long run. So I mean they do look different each time, but I can find myself that I track where my marathon pace is at and how I'm feeling through those. And then just before the marathon, my favorite session is the like 3 minutes above marathon pace, 3 minutes below. So quite a small gap between them, but just floating above and below pace. And it's a shorter one, so I'd only do that for about 60 minutes with some jogging either side. And I kind of know whatever I average out on that session is kind of roughly where I'm going to be in the marathon. So that's my favorite one. But also you dread it a bit because if it doesn't go to plan, yeah, it's not ideal.
Yeah. And are those the types of sessions that you are practicing your fueling with alongside the actual session itself?
Yeah, so those same sessions will be the ones that I fuel with. I do take fuel on my easy long runs as well, but it is difficult to, you don't stomach it quite the same or take it on quite the same unless you're at your pace. Mm-hmm. So yeah, those sessions are really kind of an all-rounder for every aspect of the marathon, which is why I think if they go well, you kind of feel confidence that you're getting towards the goal.
Yeah, perfect. And we should say coached by Nick Anderson.
Yeah.
How does that relationship look? Are you someone who very much has input as to how you want the sessions and build up to look, or is it purely Nick tells you what to do and you do it? How does it sit?
Yeah, so our relationship's kind of evolved a bit over the last couple of years. I joined him just under 3 years ago as a 2:48 marathon runner. So the first kind of year was really, I was really kind of in his hands in terms of what I was doing and just learning as much as I can. I think now it's much more, I'll be sending him stuff all the time. Can we do this? Can we try this? So-and-so does this, or I've seen this on YouTube. And then he kind of has to tell me sometimes absolutely no, and sometimes, okay, we'll think about that one. So we work together a lot more now to kind of develop something that I'm going to enjoy, because that's a really important part when you're training so hard, but also that he knows is going to be something that's sustainable for the future and not just doing everything right now. So yeah, it's definitely developed over the last few years.
Okay, and with that in mind, do you think there's going to be anything different looking ahead for this next build towards Munich? Do you think there's things that you would like to tweak from this last build up to towards Manchester?
Yeah, I think in terms of the training, I'm pretty happy with what we've done. Obviously, there's a few things, maybe like the timings of what day in the week you do what, we might change. But the main thing for this summer, I hope, is to get a little bit more warm weather training. Obviously, having worked full time for a long time, that's never really been an aspect until recently. And we've tried out a little bit of that this build. So hopefully now. And also it's summer, so even in Reading, it's much warmer. So I think just utilising the weather as much as possible with Munich being a hot August marathon will be the best thing.
Yeah, great. Okay. And finally, on the training, are you someone who does a lot of strength training, strength and conditioning, lifting weights sort of thing?
Yeah, so I teamed up with Go Perform, which is a gym in Reading. They're a performance gym, so they offer kind of your physio and your massage, sports rehab and strength and conditioning all in one place. So that's worked really well. I've done that. I've been going to them kind of 2 times a week for strength and conditioning for about 4 years. And I'd say it's one of the biggest aspects of my improvement, just in terms of being able to consistently train and recover well because of that strength work. So yeah, that's a fairly big aspect of my training.
Okay, that's great. Well, that's... leads me on to a question I had down further down the line, but I suppose I'll ask it now. So thinking back to your London marathon, where perhaps, I don't know if you'd want to call it a breakthrough performance, but it was certainly a performance where perhaps you were, your name was more spoken about more widely, and you got some coverage from it. Was when you ran 2:33 at London, second Brit, and it was the COVID marathon, I suppose. It was the cold, windy, rainy day held in October, the loop course, no fans, a bit of a strange setup, I suppose. But the question there was, I suppose, your PB going into that race was 2:37 from Frankfurt. And before that, you'd done London 18 months before in 2:48. So that jump from 2:48 down to 2:33 in about 18 months, I think it was. What were the things that really, do you think, contributed to that big jump in performance?
I think, so obviously in that time I did move to Nick as my coach, but I will say that my previous coaches, we were doing similar stuff and really good work with them too. But I think I was very new to it back then. Mm-hmm. So moving to like a marathon specific coach and just getting that input was big. But also I did I think I just learned a lot of things. There are a lot of things that I was kind of adding into my locker, like the strength and conditioning, adding in these longer paced marathon long runs, faster paced marathon sessions, like I was saying. Like I started all of these, but it was a case of just getting the consistency and keeping fit and keeping injury free for a block that allowed me to improve. So yeah, I don't think there was like one main thing. I did also change my role at work from a corporate role to a slightly quieter department. So I think getting more sleep was a huge thing. Sleep is just massively important, and I think often overlooked in people's busy lives. So that is I think that did really help. But yeah, I can't really attribute it to one key thing really.
So thinking back to that day, as I said, it must have been a fairly strange experience running that London race, with the hotel isolation beforehand as well. I know there's loads of secrecy about where the hotel was and things like that. So what are your thoughts looking back at that now? Is it one that you look back at with fondness?
Yeah, I look back at that and I'm just so grateful I got to do it, really, because obviously having 2:37 going in, I was the slowest seeded runner quite significantly, I think. But I was kind of showing form in training that I was around 2:33. I think that's what I told them that I would, if they gave me a place, that's roughly what I wanted to do. So I was really happy in the conditions and on the day to actually deliver that. So yeah, I always look at that fondly, just because even though it was pouring with rain, it was started at 7 a.m, like there's, mm-hmm. It was looped courses, no crowd, so many things that you'd think, oh, that would make it a terrible marathon, but it was just a great day for me. I loved it. So just happy to be there.
Great. Okay. And then from one, I suppose, fairly strange setup to another, the Olympic Trials Marathon in Kew Gardens in March 2021, seventh position in 2:37. There's loads of talk about that race, but beforehand, during and afterwards, about the location, the timing, the selection process. What were your thoughts of it? And also, as a secondary question, are you a fan of that sort of straight selection type race, or do you prefer sort of more complex process?
So I think Kew was a tricky one. For myself, I didn't have a great day. I had a few stomach problems on the day, and I think so my time maybe wasn't reflective of where I felt I could have been, but equally it was a very difficult setup with it being COVID and even knowing if it would happen. So I think they did well with the options that were available, but it was definitely a tricky place to get the times. But that being said, it was a lot of women running still pretty good times, and quite a few under the Euro standard even back then. So yeah, it was a good event, well organized, but it was a tricky one for me that day. I think I do like the trials events, and I think because Kew hadn't for me gone to plan as I'd hoped, I think that was another reason why Manchester was such a big deal for me, and I was going in kind of more with that confidence to take the race on rather than letting my nerves kind of overcome me, because I'd had the year before trial race, and then this was one where I thought, I'm really in shape now to get this place and I don't want to repeat last year. So I think selection races are good because they do show kind of who's on form and who's racing well at the time. But I would definitely say that having those extra places with panel selection are super important, because not everyone's going to be ready on that day. You might have just an illness, or I don't know, just something could happen, which means that race is not ideal for you. But that doesn't mean that you're not deserving of the place. So I do think the mix between the trial and the selection is ideal.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. I wanted to talk to you about another race this year, which must have been another big achievement and big deal for you, was representing England for the first time this year, which might get swept aside sometimes when you look back at this year. But in February, you represented England at the Granola's half marathon, finished third place, first European. What was it like to run for England and wear the vest, and how was that experience?
Yeah, that was really great. I felt like that one was really a long time coming, and that I would hope to get selected, really, because I think I made the standards for a few of the distances back pre-COVID. I guess Frankfurt would 2019 would have been my marathon time, and then obviously COVID hit and there wasn't much on, and it had been my goal for a long, long time to get a marathon best for England. So to have this half opportunity come along, and it was put on quite last minute because obviously no one knew still with lockdowns if it could go ahead. So I was so pleased when that popped up and I could get that one in and get the vest, because even if you've run the times, until you've been given the vest and actually done the race and it's gone well, like you can't really kind of say that you're an England runner or anything like that. So I was just so happy to get that opportunity and to get to run internationally. I haven't done too many races abroad, so that was good fun.
Yeah, and have you done something special with the vest? Is it in a frame or anything like that?
I haven't yet. I'm holding on to it in case I need it again for any other ones. But probably will end up on the wall at some point.
Okay, great. We like to go through our guests' PBs on this, Naomi. So I'll just run through a few of them and let me know if they've got anything of them incorrect. And what I should say as well, already this year, we're only in April, and it looks like PBs in the 10K half marathon and marathon. So a pretty good year so far already, and hopefully we'll get better. But 5K 16:18 at Battersea Park, the Friday night under the lights, second place.
Yeah.
And
10K. Well, I went through 10K at about 16 minutes, which was a bit of a shock to the system. Yeah. Back in December. So yeah, hopefully I can up that one a little bit.
Yeah, okay. Well, that was, I suppose, the question. Which of your PBs currently do you think is either due for change, or are you looking forward to trying to take down a bit of time?
5 and 10K I'd love to take down a little bit, but yeah, I'm just enjoying running the halves and marathons, so I'm happy to let them lie for a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. Do you find that when you are in sort of marathon and half marathon training, you can't get close to those 5K and 10K PBs? Or do you think that's just part of the process?
Yeah, I think it's difficult too, because you can't really do as much speed work and you also can't taper as much. But that being said, there's some fantastic times being run across the board by so many athletes. So, and obviously if I'm always running them in marathon builds, I should still be able to improve my own time, even if it's maybe not as good as some other people are running. So yeah, always an opportunity to improve.
Okay. So 10K 33:12, Stubbington 10K, which you won. Half marathon we've spoken about, Wokingham, which you won as well, 71:52, and obviously your marathon just a week or so old, 2:30:54, in Manchester. We also like to look at our guest's first entry in Power of 10, and yours, I don't know if you remember much about this, was a 1200 meter race, I think, as an under 13 in April 2006. you came second place in 4:18. Do you remember much from that race?
Oh wow. So I think I remember, yeah, I don't remember that. I remember my first road race was the Aldershot Road Relays. Okay. And it was an absolute baptism of fire. Yeah. Back, it was, you know, like a September. So I think I joined just in like the beginning of the school year, and I'm just shocked by how fast everyone was. But yeah, I definitely remember doing a lot of 1200s. I'm sure I must have done some 1000s or 600s prior to that, but yeah, definitely a long time ago.
Was there someone in particular or reason that you got into athletics and running as a youngster? How did you get into it?
Yeah, I had a teacher at primary school who always did the Reading Half Marathon, which has always been quite a big event, and obviously I'm from Reading. She used to do little assemblies on it every year with her medal and her blanket that they get given. So that was like something that made me aware of road running and running, and wanted to get involved. And then I think the year I joined a club was the Athens 2004 Olympic year, so that was the Kelly Holmes double gold. So she was definitely like big on my radar as someone that I looked up to. Yeah, just a few different things really.
Cool. Okay. And then, so fast forwarding a little bit, your time at Birmingham Uni. We know Birmingham to be a great hub for athletics and a brilliant setup they've got there. How was your time in terms of your running there? Was it a place that your running got pushed on, pushed forward? Did you have lots of good people to train with? How did that go?
Yeah, so I really lucked out with going to Birmingham, really, because yeah, like I said before, I got my job, and then it was the company that sent me to do my accounting degree and qualifications in Birmingham. So I didn't actually get the choice of the university, but was very fortunate that it was Birmingham, because I've obviously been into running for years, and I had really almost kind of conceded that I would be giving up running a little bit as my job got busier, and was just quite happy with just ticking along as a just for fun, really. But going to Birmingham reinvigorated, I guess, my passion for running, just seeing people who are also, you know, working hard and getting good results in their studies, but also training, just doing some amazing training and running really well, did make me think, actually, there's no reason for me not to keep going for this. Mm-hmm. I definitely wasn't anywhere much in the club at Birmingham. I kind of was at the back most of the time and just turning up and learning from it, but it did definitely inspire me to go for it more.
Great. Okay, that's good to hear. Oh, Naomi, we've taken up a bit of your time already. So if you don't mind, we'll just finish with some quick fire questions.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, cool. We'll start off and see how we go. So the first one we always ask our guests is, if you could go for a run with any sports person, dead or alive, who would it be?
It would have to be Kipchoge, surely. Okay. I could keep up for any amount of time.
And would you like to run with him around the streets of Reading, or would you rather go and do it in Kenya somewhere?
Yeah, I could take him on my 5-mile lap of Reading. So we'd enjoy it.
I didn't mean to ask you, actually, sort of getting back to the serious stuff. Do you have many training partners? Do you do your big sessions with other people?
Yeah, so my coach is in Winchester, so I train with a group there every Tuesday.
Okay.
And some of the guys there are really handy in offering to help me out with some of my longer runs. But otherwise, it's still a lot of the people from Reading AC, which is who I represent. I meet up with them as well, just a whole host of different people, but no kind of main consistent training partners.
Okay.
Other than my husband, if I can force him to do it.
So if Kipchoge is in town, you've got a nice 5-mile loop for him.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. If you could go back in time to witness any sporting event live, which one would you choose?
Good question. I don't know.
Are you a fan of any other sports aside from running and athletics?
Yeah, I like football. Okay. Recent years got into the boxing a little bit more, cycling. I don't know, maybe watching Pantani would be cool. Back in the day, even though maybe skeptical, but any of the sporting greats I would be happy to go and see.
Well, cycling did seem to be a bit more colourful and perhaps less formulaic back then, didn't it?
Yeah.
Looking at those, yeah. Okay, that's a good one. We've not had one like that before. That's cool. Somewhat linked, I suppose. If you could be a professional athlete in a sport aside from running, which sport would you choose?
I don't know. Something like skiing or something that needs a lot of skill that I don't have would be good.
Do you have any pre-race rituals or superstitions, or do you always listen to the same music or anything like that?
Manchester was a great place to do a marathon because all my favorite bands are like the Stone Roses, Oasis, okay. The Smiths, so yeah, definitely had more of those tunes on getting me up for that. But I think, I don't know, just I don't have any kind of superstitions or anything. Depends who I'm with.
Cool. Okay. And do you have a favorite race? So not a distance specifically, but an actual race event.
I mean, the London Marathon has always been my absolute, well, it was my dream to run. And then obviously I've got to run it and have the elite start was a dream and I've ticked that off. So that's always, yeah, that's great. I will say just because I'm local to it, I'd love to win the Reading Half Marathon because I still haven't done that. Okay. But I have to say the London Marathon.
Yeah, okay. So Reading half always finishes at the Majewski Stadium, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, cool. So we'll look out for that in the future then. And the final question then, what's your go-to either post-marathon meal or snack or treat that perhaps you wouldn't ordinarily have?
I'm a vegan, and a Donut Time do a great selection of vegan donuts, so definitely give them my business after the marathon.
Sounds good. All right, well, Naomi, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Congratulations on what's been a great year so far, and what will hopefully be, you know, even have another big successes coming up, especially at the European Champs. We wish you all the best, and we'll be rooting you on. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having me.
Okay, thanks.